This podcast is brought to you by the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics. 7 legendary titles including X-Men vs. Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Enjoy new features like online multiplayer, training, and gallery modes. Plus, join in on the action with one-button specials, where players of all skill levels can unleash those epic moves with ease. Relive the classic arcade battles. Get your hands on the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection today. Available now on PlayStation 4, PC, and Nintendo Switch.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
We are going to give Fire Camino a call.
Hello?
My man, what's up?
Not much, man. How are you?
Good. We are rolling. I went ahead and started at the beep. So hold back any animosities you may or may not have.
Very good to know.
What's good, brother?
I just got off of work, heading home.
Oh, it's a driving episode.
It is a driving episode. Now that I'm not boozing, I can be cruising.
I like it. That's the same philosophy for me. So it takes three things for me to get in trouble. Myself, a vehicle, and booze. So if me and booze are together, I don't want to have any keys. And if me and my vehicle is together, I don't want to be around the booze.
See, here at Porch Talk, we advocate safe driving.
Oh, yes, we do. Or you'll feel the pain. Back when I was in MASAP class here in the wonderful state of Mississippi, when you get a DUI, you are required to go to a month MASAP. That is a Wednesday night for an entire month, and you learn a lot.
So, where do these classes take place? Like, I've always wondered that.
Different.
Whoa! Fucking goddamn it! Sorry. Nobody knows how to drive.
I figured that was going to happen. We were talking earlier, and I was like, are you sure that's a good idea to be podcasting and driving? And Josh said, yeah, it is.
No, it's one of those things that, like, I can't imagine. Like, I have a strict rule that, like, I'll never drink and drive. Like, I really try not to drink and drive. And because if anyone's ever been in a car with me, you'll know I don't know how to drive to begin with.
Ah.
So, I don't need to throw a libation on top of it. I'm already a danger to others on my own.
I can back that. I rode with Josh for a short period of time, and I asked him to pull over to let me drive.
A short period of time, it was 1 minute. I pulled your truck out of Munson's and completely destroyed the first curb.
Yeah, and I was like, let me see what I can do with this.
Right.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, it's a miracle I can get back and forth to work every day.
Man, I feel that way for a lot of people. Another thing, too, like the benefits of driving completely sober is, let's say you were to get into an accident and it wasn't your fault. Just because you were under the influence, it is now your fault. And if someone was hurt severely, or maybe their life was taken, now you effectively committed manslaughter.
It's a fucking old Stanhope bit, but he has this joke where it's like, yeah, here you are going to the party at a .08. And here's this 92-year-old fucking grandpa that shouldn't be driving to begin with, fucking runs a red light. But if you hit him, you're going to jail, and the fucking headline's going to read, fucking drunk kills war hero.
Oh, that is a really great bit. It's the truth. But, yeah, dude, and man, I'm sure it's listeners here. You probably know somebody in your family. You may be the one. I used to date a girl, Josh. She would put her phone up and on the dash, like in front of the speedometer, and she would pull up Netflix and watch The Office while she was driving.
See, that's fucking, it kills me, because how many times do you see, like, driving down the road and there'll be people just on their phone texting, you know?
Yeah, and statistically, man, that is just as dangerous as drinking and driving.
Yeah, at least with drunk driving, you're trying to focus.
Yeah, you're trying. It's just there's three roads.
Right. No, I mean, that's what kills me, too, where it's like, you know, if you're drunk and you get hit by somebody that's texting and driving, yeah, it's still your fault because you're drunk. And it's like, I don't know. I feel like drunk drivers are unfairly discriminated against in this country.
Well, I'll tell you this, and it's a little bit different between Alabama and Mississippi, but I'm going to assume, which will probably make an ass out of you and me, but in Mississippi, let's say you went through a Dewey checkpoint.
Yeah.
Well, you weren't drinking, but they still suspected that you were under some kind of an influence. Now that marijuana is medicinal in the state of Mississippi, this is how this works. They can, if they presume that you are under the influence of marijuana, they can ask for you to do a field sobriety.
Yeah.
And you can give it away. You can give away your highness with your eyes. They look for the exact same thing as if you were drinking. It goes down to, follow my pen or my finger while they're shining a light in your eye. And when they go to the corner, one, they're looking to see, will your eyes go to the corner and stay without jumping? If you have astigmatism, that's near impossible, by the way. And then they're also checking to see if you turn your head. And so if you do either of those things, they're going to give you a couple of chances, but it's really hard to pass that field sobriety. And so what they'll do is the only way to prove that you have been under the influence of marijuana is a blood test. So if
it shows up in your system for 30 days.
That's exactly right, Josh. And so, and the amount that you... I think it's, they're just like 100 nanograms. It may be less than that. It's set pretty low, to where, let's just say that you were a casual smoker and you had lit up at 6 or 7 in the morning and it was 8 or 9 that evening. You would still fail for that.
Yeah.
And, let's see, what else?
It's insurance claims. That's what fucking gets me. We're like, all right, let's say you get hurt on the job. Well, any workman's comp thing, they're going to fucking drug test you. And it's like, yeah, pot stays in your system for like 30 fucking days. So, like, you may have smoked a joint 2 weeks ago, but then fucking drops up on your foot at work. Well, fuck you, buddy. We're not going to pay for it because you pissed hot.
Yep.
Like, that don't seem fair.
Yeah. I'm curious to see where it goes, man. They, I don't know if they're going to, but I hear, when it comes time for legislation, I think maybe around springtime in Mississippi, they're going to start talking about moving toward recreational use. Because the laws that they have set for it right now is they're not working. And, They're a little too strenuous in some places, and then some places they do need to tighten up a little bit.
Yeah.
But
it's weird because I don't understand the federal I still want to hold out on it. You know what I mean? Like, there's so much tax revenue to be made.
It's the same.
It just seems silly.
It's the same for gambling, man. I'm not for or against it. I have family members who struggle with a gambling addiction. I hate to hear when they go to the casino, but I don't think it should be illegal.
Right. Well, here's what gets me is I like to gamble on sports. But, because I live in Alabama, I can't do fucking DraftKings or FanDuel or any of that shit. So, what I have to do is go to these sketchy-ass fucking websites that are based out of fucking, Hong Kong or Sweden or whatever the fuck. And then you got to go to Coinbase and buy fucking, Litecoin and fucking send that shit over. And, like, I'm probably funding some god-awful war in a third world country just so I can bet on the Dolphins. And it's like, why do I have to go through all this shit when it's like, if you just legalized it, I could download an app and then just do it all here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, there is, that I remember, this is, it's when I got deeper into sport betting than I ever have, and it's also when I finally quit doing it. I won't even mess with a fantasy draft. I can't handle it. I just go crazy. Now I understand with like a fantasy draft, you know, you have a buy-in and then it's over, but it's not like, oh man, I used to love to bet on the NBA, and man, I'm talking about $5 here, $10 there, parlays of minute things like who's going to win the tip-off, who's going to be the first to score, who, you know, whatever, you know.
Yeah, those prop bets, those are fun.
Yeah, and man, just slowly watch how quick a $100 bill just drained. And whew, I had to straighten up quick out of that. Because, I mean, it always seems like when you sign up and you get started with those things, it's like you're set up to win.
Well, because they give you, like, it's like casinos where it's like, oh, $200 free play, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, that goes fast, you know?
Yeah.
Typically, yeah, you win a few, so you go, oh, this shit's easy. And then once you're in there, you're like, uh-oh, you know?
Yeah. You are.
Do you ever do any lightning bets with NBA?
The app that I was using, it was through a UK site, and probably did. It just wasn't called that.
You know where, like, you set an amount on the over-under, and then, like, all right, so anything, like, let's say you put $10 down and you bet the over. Well, anything over the over is 10 bucks. Like, every point is equal to, like, $10. But if you're under that, then you owe them $10 for each point it's under. So you can lose your ass really fucking quickly, but you can make a lot of money really quickly, too.
Oh, my God. Dude, I would be scared to death of that. But that definitely sounds like something I would lose big on one time and be like, oh, man, I ate that.
Oh, I'll tell you another thing. Now, this is just me fucking talking about degenerate gambling shit. You ever heard of NFL Red Zone? Did you ever get that package?
I never got the package, man. I have been over to friends' houses, you know, to watch multiple games like that. That's Red Zone, right, to where you have, like, a plethora of games on TVs at once?
Yeah, because anytime they get within, like, the 25-yard line or whatever, it cuts to that game instantly. So you're just seeing, like, nonstop action, like, right there at the fucking end zone.
Yeah.
So if you want to have a good fucking Sunday, combine NFL Red Zone with other narcotics and fucking bet the over on every single game. So you bet the over on every single game. So every time it cuts to the end zone, you get that dopamine rush because you go, oh, fuck, I'm making money because I'm getting closer to that over. So every single time it cuts to a thing, you get that little rush in your head. And it doesn't matter who's scoring because both teams, you need them to go up for the over. So you're like, ah, and it's just fucking every score. It doesn't matter. It's all about just, oh, touchdowns, 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 woo! And that's a good day.
What about with gambling, dude? Are you, I think there's two types. There's the nickel-dimer, and then there's somebody, like, the reason that they make a bet or they gamble, it's for the thrill of it, so they're gonna bet an amount of money that's gonna hurt.
So nowadays I'm a lot more reserved, but like back in the day, I remember being like, all right, if I get it, like every 2 weeks, I get a paycheck for $1,200. I'll put $1,000 on this game. Because I know I get paid Friday and I can bail myself out. And I'll have enough money to still get to work and eat a little.
Yeah.
I don't do that anymore. But,
that's living on the edge right there, dude.
Yeah, that's, you know, because if you're going to do it, do it. It can't be like, you know, because you lose like $20. You go, oh, it sucks, I lost $20. But, you know, when you have like an entire pay period riding on it, that's when you're like, oh, shit. Like, that can make any fucking game. Like, the Carolina Panthers could be playing the fucking Raiders, and suddenly that's the Super Bowl, you know.
Yeah, totally. Whew. I think that all those compilations of people breaking their TVs and people want to say it's because of fandom, it's probably because they lost their ass.
Yeah, because if you fucking put enough money on the game, that's the thing, too, that people don't understand. They're like, why are you so invested in this game? It's like, because I'm actually invested in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just means more.
Dude, nothing is worse than doing that shit with a girlfriend, because they're like, oh, I'm sorry your team lost, and you're like, honey, I just lost $600. Like, you don't understand. This shit sucks. Like, I don't give a damn about these teams.
Yeah. The money. Yeah. It's going out to eat like a Sunday afternoon. There's games on. You're not really interested until the later game. So, oh, where are we going to go out to eat? And you just automatically. It's the food's not even good. It's like a Buffalo Wild Wings, just because you know there are TVs everywhere.
Yeah.
You're about to not pay any attention. What do you want to eat? You're at a wing joint, and you're going to be ordering chicken fingers or a burger. That's how much you're thinking about it.
Right.
Not even paying attention. Mercy.
I have to say, though, now that I don't bet, like, it... Now that I don't bet as much, I should be honest. But fucking, it's not as, like, yeah, like, when you, I don't know, like, I'm not as invested in watching it anymore.
I used to, used to be heavy in the football. I would do, I like to do college more because I thought I knew it better as, you know, as if some of that mattered. And Vegas seemed to always pad the over-under and the spread so well that it's kind of unpredictable. Like, you would almost always just take the underdog in the spread, especially, like, dude, if you looked at the way that I betted, you would never have said that I was an Alabama fan, because I would always bet against them. Like, there was a period of time where they never covered the spread. And it was like 5 seasons straight. It wouldn't matter if they were playing, you know, LSU, or if they were playing, I don't know, somebody rink-a-dink. They were playing
Middle Tennessee.
Good example. They just paid those guys $2.3 million to come down to Bryant-Denny and just get cream-pied. But, like... The spread would be like 60.5. And he's like, okay, I'm pretty sure Saban is not going to let them score 60 points.
Right.
And for the most part, you'd be right.
Well, see, Alabama became one of those teams that, like, because Alabama won so much, they got propped up by Vegas. So there's certain teams, like, that because... I'll give you a great example in baseball. Baseball, you can make a good bit of money because if it's ever the Red Sox or the Yankees, because that's like the two most bet on baseball teams. And what happens is, because there's so many people that like, oh, you're going to Vegas. Well, here, put $25 on the Red Sox for me just to say I put in a bet, you know, because it's just a fun thing to do. And so... Because of that, it skews the betting. So sometimes you can make a good bit of money when you know, like, Alabama or, like, you know, those big teams like the Red Sox or the Yankees, they're not going to win. because people will automatically have money on them because they don't pay attention to the game. They just want to put money on their favorite team.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be... That's nuts. Are they still doing that with Vegas since, like, gambling's become, like, more legal? Isn't, like, they have the Rams now, right?
Yeah, they do.
Because,
they have the Raiders.
Oh, yeah, it is the... Yeah, the Rams are back in L.A.
Yes.
But... Yeah, I think, like, when they started getting sport teams back, like, the laws and the way that Vegas was run, I think they cleaned it up. I think, like, really, like, you would probably be better off, like, gambling or betting there than probably anywhere else, for real.
It's not, like, you know, back in the day, it was like fucking casino with Joe Pesci. I mean, it was. It was a bunch of fucking wise guys that ran the fucking... books and everything down there. And like now, like if you look at Vegas now, it's not seedy. It's like Disneyland. Like there's so many like family attractions and shit. Now they have the Sphere. Like they, you know, it's not what it... Vegas now is what like Disney World is, but like Vegas back in the day, what like Reno is now. You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
I got you.
Because Reno's a shithole. Reno's still like, oh, yeah, we're Sin City. What happens in Reno fucking shows up on an STI report. But, you know, like, yeah, Vegas now is Disney World. It's not the same. Like, I would never want to go to Vegas now.
Yeah, I've never been. I never really had a desire for it. It's kind of like, in my mind, it's kind of changed now on it. But, I mean, there was... most of my life, like, you could have invited me all expenses paid to go to New York City and I probably still would have turned you down. I never was interested to go. I always felt that way about, like, there was only like two cities in California that I would actually want to go see. For the most part, it was like, I don't really care if I ever get to go see that in person.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've never cared for... Like, the idea of going to a big city for me is not exciting. Like, I'd never want to see L.A. or New York or, you know... People are like, oh, you got to. It's like, why? What's there for me? You know?
Yeah, and I mean, also, like... And I'm not throwing any shade, but I remember before he went... we were hanging out, and I had a buddy of mine. He was excited that he was going up to the big city. He was going to take a bite out of the Big Apple. He was playing a show in New York City. He was happy about it, right?
Yeah.
As one should be. I mean, you know, maybe that is, you know, how people have different goals. Like, some people, you know, maybe you start out local. It's like, well, I want to have my name on the marquee at the Knick. Or, you know, I want to have my name on the board at Monson's. And then, you know, you get some years invested and you get pretty well established around a state or a couple of states. And you start getting opportunities to open for somebody. And the next thing you know, it's like, well, I want to play the Ryman. And then maybe, right. You know, maybe the Red Rocks comes up. You want to do Red Rocks. But anyway, like, the guy was really obsessed with wanting to play New York City. He, to him, that was like bucket list, and that was going to be like, I made it. It was, you know, didn't really care about how the show went. It was just the fact that it was done. And when he got back, dude, like how much he grew up from the experience. Cause I don't think it went very well for him at all. I mean, I couldn't imagine being somebody from, you know, this part of the country, and probably a rarity in and of itself that anybody in the big city heard of you, much less knows you're going to be playing there.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the thing. If you don't have a big enough following, you know, like, even, like, if you're as small as me, like, if I played a show in Tuscaloosa, I'm not going to get a crowd because people are going to, who the fuck is Fire Camino? You know?
Hey, man. Yeah, that's one thing. I do like to see what my friends are doing musically. I like to see and hear about where they're playing and what they're doing. You know, I'm happy for them. And that's one thing that I am kind of I'm happy with social media in that regard. But like, oh, dude, I'll be at Eddie's Attic in Atlanta. I was like, that's a great venue. Congratulations. That's a step in the right direction, you know. And I like seeing those things. But then it's like sometimes it just seems like it's made to be a flex. It's somewhat a little hateful. You know what I mean?
Sometimes. Because there are some people that are pricks. They're like, ooh, look at me. I'm playing in L.A. It's like, well, you know, you were bombing for 20 people here. I can't imagine it's going to go that much better out there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know how people, like, there are some people that they play certain, like, big cities and spots just to say they did it, you know?
Yeah, and that...
Like, look, I'm in Nashville or Austin or wherever.
Yeah, just because you're there, it doesn't mean it's going to go well for you. Also, like, going to a town like that is, I mean, you're going to be... You got to keep in mind that there are probably 30 to 50 shows happening the same time as when you're doing yours.
Right.
You don't have the key to the city that night.
Well, also, too, just because you're king shit, like, here in, like, buttfuck nowhere, Alabama, you're not going to be that when you get to a big city, you know?
Yeah. I mean, hell, we talked about it on the last time that you were on, that the guy that I had ran into at the festival that we were at, and, you know, like, automatically we didn't get along because he opened up the conversation to me by talking shit about the town that I plan events in, you know?
Right.
And, like, first thing is, like, so there just ain't no live music in this town, huh? And I was like, well, there was actually two shows last night. You had a, what they call a barn series, and then you had live music at Munson Brothers. And so there was two opportunities, and he was like, well, you know, I looked online, and I didn't find anything. And I was like, well, man, that's kind of a... I mean, that's a good point, but at the same time, that's kind of a diss that you're making out of ignorance.
Yeah, because you're talking out of your ass. You don't really know.
Right.
I would love to do a tour of where it's just small towns.
That's
like if I just played like Columbus's or like Demopolis, Alabama.
Josh,
or, you know, stuff like that. Like, that would be cool. Instead of big cities that everyone goes to.
Did you hear the, it was one of the more recent episodes that I did with a guy called Marty, the Wayfaring Barfly?
I did. I really enjoyed that episode.
That's what he does. But at, I mean, he keeps it. He played for us at Monson's. If there's an opportunity to play, cause he doesn't know where he's going or what day he's going to be there.
Right.
He's, you know, it's, I kind of like his style of that. It's kind of like a leaf blowing in the wind. It's just wherever the wind blows is where I'll end up. And, that's a very interesting thing. And I like that concept, too. You know, and I'll give full credit to him. I think it's interesting with what Bert Kreischer does with his Fully Loaded tour. You know, that there could be someone that, you know, his people who are not fans of his, you know, they would say that he's... It's a form of narcissism. He wants to be known as an arena act, and so he will play, you know, every arena in every town because that is something that he wants to have as his legacy. Maybe something to that, but at the same time, you have to think. I mean, here in Mississippi, he brought his tour to Brandon, and to my knowledge, I don't think they do a lot of comedy there, so. They got a taste for something they normally don't get. or have to drive to.
When you go to different markets, you know, because some people, just like I was saying earlier, where like people go to like, you know, yeah, if you go on tour, it's like, all right, you're going to play Atlanta and Nashville and like, you know, like those big cities. But like, yeah, go to something like Brandon, Mississippi, you know.
Mm-hmm. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Then buy one, get one free on our full line sale of tender Tyson chicken with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
That's more interesting to me.
Yeah, and Brandon is like, it's just outside of Jackson, but still, just the fact that just comedy in and of itself in the state is, Bancorp South Center, it used to be called that. It's unchanged name. Some other, maybe it's Cadence now. Some other bank bought it. But, yeah. Tupelo has like an arena, and they'll do comedy there about once a year. If I ain't mistaken, Bert Kreischer was one of the last ones to go to that one. But there's not a whole lot of comedy in the state. Like Hattiesburg has a scene. I kind of follow Mary Ryan Brown for that. And then other than that, like, they're having to go to New Orleans or Baton Rouge to go do comedy, because that's the closest place that actually has a thriving scene other than Hattiesburg.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking about Alabama, and I was like, well, I'm going to guess, like, Mobile probably has an open mic comedy scene, and they probably have some comedy. Definitely at like the Sanger, I'm sure, a nice theater, and then Birmingham, and I was like, maybe Huntsville, but I was like, that's
comedy scene sucks though.
Huh?
Our comedy scene sucks.
Well, at least you have one, you know.
Yeah, but it really, like, it's one of those things. If you go to one open mic, you can go to that one open mic and then wait 6 years. And you'll go back to that same open mic, and it'll be the same people doing the same jokes. You know? Uh-huh. Like, there's no growth. And it's one of those things, like, you know how, like, with your open mic, like, you're very good about including others, especially outsiders that are new?
Yeah.
our comedy scene is not good with that at all. Of where, like, oh, you're like an outsider. It's like, no, some dude new trying it out. Like, maybe, you know, help boister him, you know, lift each other up.
I never understood that, man. Just with, I feel like this, for the whole, like, with what Harder Row to do, like, they'll do a house show at a place called the New House. It's a place where they can do a house show. And, I mean, they'll have bands coming into Columbus from literally all over the country. They've had people come from Miami. They've had people come from out west, from Louisiana, just all over the place. And they'll charge a door fee. And it's more of a punk scene. Like, I love going to those shows because I see a lot of people that I don't see out. I mean, that's literally the only time I see them is because, like, there's an actual event in town that they would like to go to. And then with everybody else that has something to do in Columbus is we try to prop up, I feel like, outsiders more than ourselves because, I mean, just it's not a big place. You know, most of the music lovers in town, they've heard all of us to ad nauseum. And it's good to take the night off and support somebody from out of town to let them run it.
Well, I can't tell you how welcomed and loved I felt when I played Munson. Like, that was beautiful. Like, y'all were so nice, you know.
Try to be. And I mean, I'm sure, like, the your second and third time, fourth, fifth, whatever, you're gonna start to be considered, you know, one of us, and you know, and so you'll probably have to start staying after the bar closes and join our slingshot gang, and we'll have to come up with some kind of well, you already got Fire Camino, so you don't have to worry about the nickname, and you'll have to go through the rites of passage.
Oh, hell.
And
I feel like rites of passage is going to end up with me out in the field somewhere.
No, I mean, that kind of sounds like you're getting ready to be in a fraternity house, but no, it's nothing like that or severe. It's more of an invitation to something that you would like to go to. It would be like we do just our music community, man. We get together 2-3 times a year, and we'll throw a big barbecue in the backyard of one of our houses, and, you know, everybody will bring what they want to eat, what they want to drink, and we'll just sit around for hours and just pass instruments, and you'll have different people playing with one another that you typically don't see playing with one another, and people will come by, you know, and stop by to listen for a couple of hours, and then they'll leave, and somebody else will kind of stop by, and we do that, and that's kind of like the rite of passage. It's like you're invited to the party.
Right, yeah.
You're one of us.
We're just like, that guy's all right. We'll let him hang out.
Yeah.
Man, did you see where Jane's Addiction broke up? Not broke up, but they ended their tour.
Oh, brother, I saw it coming. Pete Navarro and was it Perry?
Perry Farrell and Dave Navarro.
Yeah, they, man, they just can't get along.
But you know what's suspicious? Is like the day that they announced they're canceling their tour, they announced they released a new single.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe.
So part of me is like, is it marketing?
I don't think so. No, I don't think at that age. You know, and they might have like the best marketing person in the world, but I don't think somebody like Jane's Addiction, both of them are successful outside of Jane's Addiction as well. I mean, I really saw this tour that they were trying to do is, it was one for the fans, and, you know, those two guys, they just couldn't hold it together. And I may be romanticizing that shit, but I don't see like some old cats like that that don't really need it to try to do some kind of marketing to become relevant again. Jane's Addiction still plays probably over the airwaves, probably hundreds of times a day, you know?
Oh, yeah, easily. Yeah. Like, they're still probably selling those first two records.
Oh, dude, that first one, that's one of the best. That's a great record.
Yeah.
Second one's no slouch either.
Yeah, fucking. That's one of those. You know how everyone talks about, like they talk about the grunge movement. They talk about all these records that came out in, like, the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, why does nobody talk about Ritual Dehabitual? Like, that record kicked so much fucking ass.
That's one thing that Monk is quick, fast, and in a hurry to do is when we slip into the grunge, and we do often, and I've gotten to a point to where I try to always bring them up because they get forgotten in that discussion. It's always, you want to bring up Nirvana and Alice in Chains and Pearl Jam, maybe even STP, but people sleep on, like, probably the band that really put it on the map right before those hit, Mudhoney. They never get mentioned.
Yeah, Mudhoney was great.
And there are other bands, like, from that Seattle scene, just before...
Dude, Mother Love Bone.
Yes, yes, yes. That they get no recognition.
Yeah. Fucking... It's weird, the ones that, like, made it... I know, like, there a lot goes into, like, a band becoming popular and this and that, whatever, but it is funny to look back on, like, the ones that were, like Screaming Trees. Like, I get it, they broke up, and that's, you know, what called Mudhoney and everything, but it's, like, they were a lot better than, you know, what was coming out and what got big. You know, like, I'd put them over, like, Tad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a big part of, like, man, what I've really enjoyed doing here. I just got a CD in the mail the other day from Buffalo, New York. Our good friend Fuzzy, he's got a new record coming out later this year. And, you know, whether it be the Birmingham scene or Tuscaloosa or even, you know, here in my area in the Golden Triangle of Mississippi, or if it's down in Hattiesburg, you know, I always try to speak highly of our people and what we're doing. Because, man, you have your Rolling Stone and all your different rags, you know, to share, you know, what's popular and already out there. You know, Taylor Swift, whomever else. But, like, to really create a space for the underdogs and, you know, for the indies, you know, like us and like what we're trying to do.
Well, I mean, that's one of those things of where, like, when you're our size, like, that's, like, word of mouth is so important, you know, and there's so many great bands, like, local bands that, like, you hear about and then you go, oh, I guess I'll go see them. And then you see them and you go, holy shit, those people are amazing. You never know, like, that's in your backyard. You know.
Yeah. You know, like, when Patton was talking about, oh, and I'm blanking on the name of the Chucker, the event that he started doing in October to memorialize that, that band Blip, the first time I saw them was at Druid City Brewing, and for that time period, and even to right now, they were great. It kind of sucks that they didn't have more exposure. You know what I mean? I always feel like that with, like, Dexatines or I feel, and it, they don't seem to care. I don't know. I wasn't there then, but now. But at the same time, it's like hearing it, even though that's 20, 25 years old now, or however old it, you know, it the recordings are, they still hold up to time. They still sound as good now as they did then. And it's one of the perfect examples of why I say, like, where we are in this pocket of the country, the Twin States, man, I just don't think there's anywhere else in the country that sounds this good.
No. I can't think of anywhere else in the country that could produce something like Headphones, like that first fucking Dexateens record. Like, I don't think that sound could come out of anywhere else.
It just it had that whole aura, and like every now and then people do it. Like the latest, is it Kalahula? The latest Taylor Hollinsworth record. It has that kind of feel to it. Of Will Stewart, Sarah Lee Langford, Early James, Kyle Kimbrell. You know, I could keep on Taylor Honeycutt. Just keep going down the list. Is like, when I hear those recordings, when I hear those songs, like, it's almost, I wonder how it would hit if I wasn't from here, because it's like tones from home. I know exactly what that is. Do you know, does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. Because it's like, it resonates so much. Like, there's certain cultural touchstones that you have when you grow up in an area. And, like, those artists, like, hit that. Like Will Stewart's a great example of what's that fucking record he has that has Sipsy on it?
Oh, County Seat.
Yeah. That one especially. Like, there's so much, like, little lines that are probably throwaway lines to, like, a casual listener, but when you grow up down here, you're like, oh, that, you know, it triggers a memory, you know?
It really does, man. It's wild you bring up Sipsy. Man, that record, County Seat's been on my mind. So the past couple of nights, I've been sitting with it just while I'm sitting outside in the evenings. And just, you know, out the gate, Sipsy comes on, and that just automatically put me in a space. Takes me back home, really.
Yeah.
That is definitely one of my favorite records. That's the same one. It's got Brush Arbor on it. And for those of you who may have not heard, Alabama Astronauts is a podcast put on by Farrell Gibbs and Abe Partridge. It's where Abe Partridge, he spent his COVID, his lockdown, to where there was no tours, there was no shows to be had for someone who makes a living supporting his family by going on tour. And so he used that time to go on the road and spend time with the snake handling churches and preachers. And it was really inspired. And the fire was ignited even more because of a song that Will Stewart wrote called Brush Arbor. And it's actually featured on that podcast, because a brush arbor was something that they would build, and it was a line in a book called Salvation on Sand Mountain that Will Stewart read, and it kind of inspired that song. Did you know that?
I did not, but what's a brush arbor?
So that is, it's like a, think tent revival. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
So, but a brush arbor, it can be, think like a whole lot of lattice and brush thrown over to make like a tent like setting, like maybe down a mountainous hill, looking off over into a valley, something
like
to that.
Like a giant lean-to?
Yes, very much.
Okay.
And it'll be candlelight service, and it's one of the, like, I imagine whether you're a visitor or someone who grew up in Snake Church, because they don't do it all the time.
Yeah.
It's on a special occasion. And so, man, every hair on your body has to be standing straight up when that ceremony is going on.
That's why I think, like the place where you worship matters at just as much as worshiping. I need to start going back to Mass.
You're Catholic?
Yeah, I am, actually. I didn't grow up Catholic. I grew up fucking, like, Baptist, but then, like, my family never really went, and then I kind of didn't believe for a while, and yeah, I became Catholic. I never had, like, a confirmation or anything. I just became Catholic.
Yeah. I could see that. You know, after my divorce, I used to be heavily involved in ministry. I did a lot of mission work, and we worked a lot in impoverished areas in Mobile, and that's what I was working to do for the rest of my life, was to work in those fields.
Yeah.
And when all of that fell apart, I had like a, it was almost like you took the straw that broke the camel's back, I guess, because everything just, one little thing in my life went wrong, and it like just catapulted everything else to where all I had was a pile of rubble, so to speak.
Right.
So I moved back home. My grandma and my dad was in poor health, and was with them, stayed with them for a time. But after that, I would go on, Josh, to explore different sects within the faith of Christianity. I've been to the Mass, very beautiful religious experience. I really enjoyed myself. Obviously, I didn't partake of everything because I was a guest, but just to be there, a very very beautiful thing.
No, I don't know. It resonates with me. Yeah.
Well, great.
Yeah,
I think that's one of the great things about Christianity to me is there are so many different flavors, as it were. You can kind of pick and choose, you know, what you believe and how far you're willing to go with that. And there's probably a sect of Christianity that lines up with that belief.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too, is, like, don't be afraid to explore, you know. Because, I mean, who's to say you're right? You know, maybe they got it figured out down the road, you know.
Well, I always heard this, Josh, when it came to finding the perfect church. And you've been visiting. Guess what? You finally find it, and you join it. And guess what happens because you joined it?
What?
It's no longer perfect.
Yeah.
Because you just ruined it.
Fair enough.
and I always thought that was a great analogy. You know, it's I was living in Columbus before we moved back over here to Starkville. And there toward the end I had found a church that I enjoyed going to. I liked fellowshipping with those people. But that's one thing that I don't believe in, is I don't believe in going to church in a different town than where you live. I think you need to be involved with those people there because what you know, the lay of the land, the way of the people, and just how to commune and pray and, you know, go through the fellowship of breaking bread and drinking wine, and, you know, going through communion and all those different things. It's better to take part of that with someone that you actually live in a community with.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Well, kind of. Because, I mean, I go downtown if I ever go to Mass.
Well, yeah, it may be a circumstance to where you have to with that. Like, I know where I grew up, you had to pick a flavor of Protestantism. You know, you could be Church of Christ, you could be Pentecostal, you could be Baptist, you could be Methodist.
Yeah.
And you had different sects of Baptist, but you didn't, you know, their Judaism wasn't there. There wasn't a synagogue, you know, there wasn't a mosque for Islam, there was no mass. I mean, there was no Catholics in that area. I mean, there were, but they would have to go to a bigger town. They would have to go to Tuscaloosa to go worship. You know what I mean?
Well, it's like, I mean, ask the boat I'm in. It's funny because in Pinson there is a Catholic church, but we have a big Hispanic population, so it's in Spanish, which I get it, Latin mass, but I mean, come on. Like, you know, like I would be the only white guy in there, and I don't speak a lick of Spanish.
It's a great way to learn, Josh.
Yeah. That'd be a great language to learn.
It's not bad, man. It served me well. It's been so long since I've had to practice it. But every now and then, if I get around, like if I'm working the back bar, it doesn't happen much at all. It's happened like twice in like 2 or 3 years. But if someone at the back bar happens to speak Spanish, I know enough of the language to where after I've heard maybe a paragraph,
yeah,
I know enough of those words to halfway put together what they were trying to convey. And then you would have to give me about that much longer to be able to try to construct a sentence and say something back.
Yeah, the only word I know in Spanish is trejebo.
Is what?
Trejebo.
Was it work?
Work.
Yeah. I kid around with my coworker, man. Like, you know, on a lot of these job sites, we go out to, they're breaking ground and they're throwing the foundation down. And then the carpenter crew who is framing this house, it's typically a guy that, you know, runs a crew of Spanish-speaking only guys.
Right.
And whenever we go in there to install the meter, and they'll come up to me and they don't speak English, and they're trying to tell me, we don't have power. And, like, just some of the words that I use, because I don't know where they're from. The language barrier, it's just like English when it comes to the United States. Like, you know, you have Southern slang and then New England slang, West Coast slang, all that.
Yeah, but this is countries.
Yeah, this is countries. And so you also had to kind of pick up on that. There's nuance there. It's crazy, dude.
Yeah. No, it's so, like, that's the thing is people go, oh, well, if you speak Spanish, then you'll be able to communicate with these people. It's like, dude, if they're from the Dominican Republic, they're not going to speak the same Spanish that they're speaking in Mexico. It's still Spanish, but not really. You know?
Oh, yeah, my short point to that story is a whole lot of a key and a kale is I'm trying to tell them, if you need the power, it's over here. And then walk them over to the breaker box. I was like, flip that, and your sparks are going to fly.
Yeah, there's a lot of pantomiming.
Yeah, I'm doing a whole lot of charades.
Yeah, you learn, because, man, I remember working landscaping. Yeah, you learn how to pantomime a lot of shit.
Mm-hmm. Well, brother, we're closing in on an hour. I do understand that you have a show this weekend.
I do. This Saturday, I'll be playing at LCY Media. It is a benefit show for One Roof Birmingham, which is a local homeless shelter here. And, man, we got an all-star lineup. We got Mel Crosby, Erica Adeponte, Gatsby, Sunshine the Poet, and Playboy G. Also including me. I'll be playing a set as well, so come out. It'll be fun.
How's that going? Do you want to share about that?
Yeah, I got it together. Yeah, I got it together last night and ran it. I feel confident. I think it'll be a really good show. Oh, I'm giving away a Stratocaster, so be a good one to come to.
There you go. Have a chance to win a Stratocaster. What I like about the way Josh does things, it's no raffle, it's no nothing. He'll literally close his eyes and point his finger in the crowd and whoever it lands on. Hey, come get this. It's yours now.
Throw it into the crowd. I'm like, whoever catches it.
I've heard about that. Was it difficult for you to pick out your set list for this? How brave did you go? Are you going to play a lot of covers? What did you do?
No, actually all originals.
Very good. Was that a difficult decision to make?
No, actually it wasn't. Actually, I had to trim some off of it because I threw in like a good bit of stuff off another sniff for Mr. Snubnose, and then I was like, oh fuck, like I'm gonna have to cut stuff back to get to that hour. So it was actually, I was kind of spoiled for choice. I thought I was gonna be like, you know, like right up on the mark, but no, like I actually had a lot of play with it.
I always like to have a little bit more than what I think, because whatever it is about being up on that stage, I guess I always just play a little bit fast.
Oh, I know I do. I blow through. I actually, funny enough, when I practice, I will practice with a fucking, with a stopwatch.
Oh, I was going to ask if you practice with a metronome.
No, fuck no.
Yeah, I had
don't
a...
do nothing on time.
Yeah, I don't... Not for what I'm trying to do. But, yeah, he was... We were talking about practice, and he was trying to give me different ideas, and I guess... I didn't know it about the guy, but I guess he was a little bit more technical than I thought, and he was like, you know, main thing I picked up from you is what you might want to think about, especially later in the night when you get a little rowdier, is he's like, you might want to consider practicing with a metronome. He was like, your timing, sometimes you'll end fast or you'll end slow. And I was like, were we trying to do that?
Right.
I was like, well, you should always be in time. And I was like, no. Sometimes you speed shit up.
Yeah, you just go by feel, man.
So I mean, I have issue with that. I don't like that.
You know who beats that into my head every time I see him, and I still have yet to do it.
Who's that?
Taylor. Taylor's like, hey, you play off a metronome yet? And I'm like, no, I don't even own one. Because he like, I love recording with Taylor, but I don't think he likes recording with me. Because, like, I don't do anything on time. You know, so it's hard to fit parts in and stuff when you're recording. I understand his frustration, but I don't know. Like, yeah, I can't get my mind to fit in that box of, like, oh, this is the one. I can't do it.
Yeah, in that case... Like, yeah, that's definitely a benefit. Something you would definitely have to do if you were recording. Everybody's gonna need. Yeah. Everybody needs to play on the same beat. I think that's important. Like with a band, if you're practicing. But the dude was talking about just people coming up on stage and playing a song together. It's like we're not taking this that serious, man.
Right, it ain't that deep.
I was like, we're not having practice on Wednesday nights the night before, dude. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, even with a band, like, I don't know. I like stuff a little loose and sloppy. Like, the bands that I've really enjoyed playing in is the bands where it's more jammy.
Is that kind of with the group you're in now?
Yeah, it is. It's a very... You know, when you say jammy, people have an idea, but, like, it... I mean jammy in, like, a funkadelic way, and not a widespread panic way. You know what I mean?
Maybe more like Ween?
No. More like Chili Peppers.
That's fun.
Does that make sense?
That's fun.
Yeah. So... Yeah, it's just like, it doesn't have to always fit, but you find a groove and you just stick with that groove, you know.
Yeah, I'm big on that. Yeah, if it's, it just depends. Man, the whole thing is, I think, fuck, drums, everything, bass. It'll work itself out. I'm tired of... I don't want to spend 10 minutes elaborating on it. I don't give a fuck.
Fuck it. We're at the end of the episode. We've met our contractual agreement for an hour. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Good night. God bless.
Got a few more miles on the county road. He ran moon up around the bend, still shining. Brother Carl's gonna be here soon. Save my soul when the spirit moves in the order.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.